Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
It's hard to think of Martin Luther King as a flesh and blood human. When we consider the ways that he challenged and inspired and literally changed the world, we can't help but become a bit detached from the fact that he lived with an extraordinary and prescient fear that he would be murdered.
I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. You just heard the speech that King gave on April 3rd, 1968. The two-person play, The Mountaintop, sets the action at the Lorraine Motel on that date, the night before King was fatally shot there by James Earl Ray. It shows us a version of Dr. King all but invisible in the newsreels and museum exhibits, a brilliant but exhausted hero with smelly socks and a taste for whiskey and cigarettes. And we explore his state of mind just before his death through his interaction with Camay, a maid at the motel who arrives to deliver a cup of coffee and stays for a long conversation that includes deep emotion and a fair amount of humor. Actor Hassan El Amin plays Martin Luther King Jr., and Akin Babatunde directed the play. The Mountaintop is open at the Dallas Theater Center through November 15th. Welcome, both of you, to Think.
Thank you very much
for
having
us. Thank you for having us.
Akin, what drew you to this show as a director?
Well, I heard about the production on Broadway, and starring Sam Jackson and Angela Bassett. So there was a lot of hype behind that. And the whole notion that Martin Luther King, our iconic figure, has human qualities was kind of fascinating and disturbing as well. Because in the past, I had heard kind of rumors that maybe there were some things that kept him from being the godlike figure we so admired. And of course, you know, even my family and friends in my community would say, oh, no, not Dr. Martin Luther King. So to explore that this extraordinary human being dealt with ordinary circumstances was quite something to look at, into.
It has to be, Hassan, both really fascinating as an actor to humanize a mythological figure and terrifying at the same time.
Absolutely. Fear factor was absolutely there to know that I was going to have the opportunity to play such an iconic man. But challenging and rewarding as an actor to be called upon to utilize your skills and talent to do just that. So for me, it was quite an honor to play Dr. Martin Luther King. So and also, you know, you like to think that you have the skills, the chop to step up to the plate and deliver a home run. And under the guidance and tutelage of Akin Babatunde and also working with Tiana Johnson on stage, I'm very proud of the Mountaintop that we present each and every night.
We should be clear that this is a fictionalized story. So the basic facts are the same as in reality, but the playwright Katari Hall basically imagined what it might have been like rather than, you know, taking any text of anything that actually happened. So when you're working with something like this, I mean, how much do you really want to go back into the actual history? And at what point do you have to step away from that to be true to the spirit of the text that you have?
Well, for me as an actor, you want as much information as you can garner about the reality of who the man was. Then once you get that, you get into the text of what Katori Hall wrote, which was taking Dr. Martin Luther King off the wall and making him a human. And then you also align yourself with what is the vision of your director. And then as a storyteller, you want to be honest to the story that you tell. So that's what our job is. It's no way that I could be Dr. Martin Luther King. I want to give the essence of who he was as a man. We all know him. We all have a relationship with him. We all know the cadence of his voice. So I want to give some semblance of that, but really tell an honest and true story.
Yeah, and as an actor, what I appreciate about Hassan is, even in our initial conversations, was I didn't want an imitation. Mm-hmm. We don't want to go, because an audience will say, well, he's not real. You know, then you'll be in a circus, because they'll be waiting for you to jump the hoop to right. see, well, that doesn't really sound like Martin Luther King, or does he really? Well, let's see how far he can go, you know? And I think once the audience sees the soul and the heart and the intention of the story that the actor is trying to say, that's even more mesmerizing than an artificial impersonation of this figure.
Yeah, and I think that's the great thing of what we do and what we've done together. Yeah. The collaboration is, it's really about the story that Katori Hall has put on paper. So this is a Dr. Martin Luther King that no one knows, because this is behind the closed door. This is a private moment in his life. Yes, fictionalized of what happened or what may have happened the night before he was assassinated, after doing the great mountaintop speech and then returning back to the Lorraine Motel. What was it like that evening before he passed the next day?
And he is devoted as ever to his ideals, but he is worn out by 1968.
And I think it's important to also mention that although it's fictionalized, there are elements that are true.
Yes.
Because I, in my research, and, you know, Hassan and I would exchange information. He said, well, you know, I found this out about it. I said, really? I didn't know that. Like, I didn't know his name was Michael.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
You know? So that's a true factor. There are some issues that are discussed that talks about a particular boy that could have affected how he felt about the Memphis situation with the sanitation workers. So I love how she cloaked those elements that are historical into possibly a fictionalized story of other elements that could be going on.
Yeah, it's a great thing that Katori Hall has actually taken historical facts, included them in the realms of the play. But the evening that you spend in the mountaintop is fictionalized, but everything around it is based upon truth. We know that there were numerous amounts of death threats. We know that he was fearful. We know that he was not scheduled to speak that night. We know that he did smoke. We know that they took a pack of cigarettes out of his pocket when he was assassinated because they did not want the world to know that Dr. Martin Luther King smoked cigarettes. We know that Larry Payne was shot 1 week before in the march. We know that these factual things happened. We know that he was scared. We know that that night that he spoke and did the mountaintop speech, they said that there were fans blowing in the ceiling. And every time one would clap, Dr. Martin Luther King would duck and dodge because he was fearful of his life being taken. Yeah. So what she's done, which is so wonderful, is that she has taken these factual incidents that we know and she's included them as the basis and the foundation of the play in which you see the mountaintop.
I like the way that art can inspire people to different emotions and conclusions. I attended the performance last Friday and stayed for the Stay Late talk, Hassan, and a woman there said, I was uncomfortable with seeing a Martin Luther King who was afraid. And I thought that was a valid observation, but for me it made him seem more courageous, that he was so afraid, and yet he kept getting up every day and going out there and doing his thing.
Yes.
As a director, I was uncomfortable tackling a figure who has affected my life and the world. And when there were elements of fear, there were times where I had to do a check and balance because I said, well, how far do you want to go? And there were times that I said to Hassan, I said, well, I don't want to show him as a scaredy cat. You know, remember that?
Yes.
I said, I don't think that's fair. I don't think he was that. And I said, so what is the balance? How would he have dealt with fear? So sometimes we had to go to the end of the spectrum in terms of his what he might have been dealing with on an emotional level to find the comfortable balance that even in his persona he would have dealt with, you know? And so I was bothered myself.
I think it's interesting, too, because I get a lot of comments like that, and they're usually from an African-American. And it's usually a woman who doesn't want to be offended because, once again, Dr. Martin Luther King is a hero.
Right.
He's a saint. He's this iconic figure that, yes, like Torrey Hall said, who sits on the wall next to Jesus. And what she has done is taken him off and grounded him to say, no, he's a human being just like you and me, and that we too can be a Dr. Martin Luther King. We had a moment early on where I wanted him to have his shoes off. And King was like, no. Dr. King would put his shoes back
right,
on.
That's that? Yeah, but, because he said, no, I think he would keep his shoes. I said, but in the presence of this person who comes in, he would have to put his shoes off. He said, but I'm comfortable. And Hassan was becoming comfortable with Dr. King being comfortable.
Hmm.
So that was a valid point because he was comfortable as King. And then I had to go back and say, but King would have been comfortable in that moment, but then did a check and balance later on. So it's interesting how we both had to keep going, well, how do we want to present him? Even we dealt with that.
Yeah, because there's this reverence that we have when you think of Dr. Martin Luther King, and which is one of the really wonderful things that I like about the play, because we are humanizing the man.
Yeah,
we are humanizing him, make him like he's like one of us, that we all have the capabilities to do incredible, wonderful, amazing things in our life, just like Dr. Martin Luther King. And I love the fact that we have found such a great balance in representing him and making him. He was scared.
Yeah.
What would it be like to be scared, to know that somebody is out to take your life? He made a statement, I will not live to see 40. He died at 39.
We are speaking this hour with actor Hassan El-Amin, who plays Martin Luther King, and director Akin Babatunde. The play The Mountaintop runs at the Dallas Theater Center through November 15th. We'll come back to our conversation with them in a couple of minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Certificate Program, where you can take courses in art, architecture, history, literature, and more. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. The play The Mountaintop is open at the Dallas Theater Center through November 15th. It tells a fictionalized version of The Last Night on Earth of Dr. Martin Luther King. We're speaking this hour with its director, Akin Babatunde, and actor Hassan El-Amin, who plays Dr. Martin Luther King. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, you can call 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. I'm curious about dialect because people don't talk today the way Dr. Martin Luther King talked. I mean, nobody talks the way he talked when he was on stage, which was magnificent. But I wonder if you can talk about what thought you gave to how much to put into the dialect and if it takes you a while to get into and out of it, Hassan, because you don't speak the way your King character speaks, even in his unguarded moments on stage.
Well, again, with Akin's direction, we wanted to find something. There were moments where we wanted to give the sound of, because everybody already has a relationship with his voice.
Right.
Everybody knows the voice.
You almost know that better than his face.
Exactly. So if we can just give you a semblance of, you hear it yourself. So again, we didn't want to go into trying to mimic and get every tone, vowel, a consonant the way that he does. Impossible to do. Then again, it would have been about trying to mimic something, and the honesty in the story would not have been there. So for us, it was just how do you find the sound of, and then allow the relationship that every audience member has with him to already speak to them. So that's what it was really about. But I listened to him. I listened to every kind of YouTube video I could find. I really looked for the moments when he was not being the orator that we all know. When he was on the Merv Griffin show or the Douglas show or when he was on Tonight Show.
when he's in those moments of being comfortable and speaking then without being in front of the thousands of millions of people and being that great orator, how does he speak in those moments of when he's just being personal with someone?
He would have still been performing, obviously, on those shows, but I wonder what you learned about how he related one-on-one by watching those interviews.
Very easy, always gentle, but what I loved about him, he's always listening. He listens to respond to what you say, not listening just for his turn to speak.
Wow.
Because he was so, because on when I saw Mike Douglas talk to him, Mike Douglas was like attacking him. Merv Griffin was supporting him. But in each one, he was very, very gentle, very easy, very slow, but always listening to respond. And I found it so fascinating because he was always, I'm ready for you. Wherever you come from, I'm here. And his response always came from the heart, and I loved it. And even in those moments, even though we say he was on, it was different than when he was doing his speeches, because now he's sitting one-to-one like we're sitting here in the room. So his tone, even his tone is his tone. The way he speaks is very calculated in how the long, how he, the length on certain things and how I, you can see him thinking in the moments. So I found that more informative for me because once again, we're behind a closed door. He's not on stage at that moment, as we say. He's not in front of the millions of people delivering some moving speech. He's being in a quiet moment, just like we are now.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I love this notion of the public and private persona because we talked a lot about that. And we talked about the figures of today who we admire. You know, I admire greatly Bishop T.D. Jakes, and I've had an opportunity to be in his presence and in the First Lady's presence, and I've observed there's a real quiet tenderness when he's not in the pulpit, and I we talked about other people who are iconic figures in our community. What would they be like in their private time? So I appreciate that each night, he hasn't said this, but before going out on stage, he listens to Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech right before he hits so that that spirit is infused in him. But there is also, in terms of dialect, like when we do Shakespeare, we have something called the iambic pentameter. You follow what Shakespeare has taught us in terms of getting the story across. It is the same thing in the African-American dialect. The story, you land certain words, you hit certain inflections, and he is an amazing proponent of that, Dr. King, his inflections, you know. I may not get there. When you, I mean, you hold on to that there. You just want to, you know, preachers do
it. It's almost like music.
It's music.
It is very musical.
It is.
Absolutely.
It's musical Shakespeare.
Yeah, absolutely musical.
Before I knew anything about this show, I would not have expected it to have so much humor in it. And we should know that that the assassination is never played for laughs and that the cause is never played for laughs. But there's some tension. And I think Kameh calls Dr. King a bougie black person.
That's right.
At one point. And there's this idea.
I think
that,
she uses another word.
I am not going to use that word.
Okay.
But there's some interesting, you know, she's in some ways like a foil. And she's it's fascinating because she's a foil from within the black community. She supports what he's doing, but there's also part of her that is not absolutely, absolutely sure that he can get it done alone.
Right. But also you have to think about the time period and what was actually going on.
Yeah.
There was dissension. You know, not everybody was in agreement with Dr. King's methods of bringing about change. You know, nonviolence wasn't everything that resonated within the community or within individuals who were seeking a change in what the country was at that time. And we know that for him, he was starting to diversify in where he was going and what he was attempting to do. So he was being challenged on different fronts, even within his community, even within his own followers. So Kamei, in a sense, represents all of that in which he was confronting at that time. You know, there were people within his own organization who was challenging him in the ways and methods that he was using. There were different movements and fractions outside that saying nonviolence was old, that we should be taking another approach to creating change and equality for us as people. So he was enduring all of that.
And there were all it's a horrible thing to admit, but even in Dallas history, there were factions that did not want him in this town because he represented, even with his nonviolent movement, he represented someone who was like a rebel of a sort. There's a great figure, Juanita Craft Jewell, who was one of the first on the council and was very influential in the NAACP movement. So I had done a one-person show on her. I had written something, and I read a lot of information about her during that time. And it was shocking to me that in this community, they didn't want him here.
Yeah.
The idea that he was going, that the path to success, according to some people, would be to sort of work within the established parameters.
Some people, right. Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about, at the end of the show, and we'll give nothing away here, but there is a sort of a litany of historical events that have happened since Dr. King died. And it was fascinating for me. I was with my 13-year-old daughter who had heard of some of those things and didn't really understand a lot of them. And we had a lot of good conversations. There are references to things that we can be so proud of and look back on with such delight. And there are references to things that are really shameful and cause us to wonder how far we've come, if at all. What's it like every night to hear those, Hassan, and sort of go through? It's almost like from one phrase to the next, you're on this kind of roller coaster.
I think also when we talk about the dream, we talk about the promised land, getting there. I think what happens at the end of the play is a big spotlight on what we've gone through, what we're enduring, what we continue to have to experience, as we can look at the hardship that our country still is involved in. I think that last moment in the play challenges everyone to stand up and make a difference in our world. It says, look at where we've come. There have been accomplishments, yes. But we still have so much to do and so far to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've always heard. I don't know. I haven't passed on. I don't have no.
not ready to go.
Yeah. But they say that your life passes before you you leave. You know, you've heard things like that. So it almost feels for me, on an esoteric level and a symbolic level, that life. We're dealing with our life passing before us. America.
Collectively.
Yes. You know, and looking at those events, and is our living in vain? You know, have we done all we can to make a difference? So that event that happens almost kind of takes me, even on a personal level, oh, I did live through that. Oh, I lived through that. Oh, where was I there? Where was I there? Did I really, am I really doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I think that last moment challenges all of us to see, you know, we have made accomplishments, we have made steps, we have progressed, but when you really look at it, it's like some things still kind of remain the same. They're just colored in a different way, you know, and it's a little scary at times when you think, you know, we think of this country and being progressive and being inclusive, but then you can look at certain things and you go, my God, my God, we still have so much further to go. You know, so that last moment, I think, is powerful just in that sense of it challenges everybody to take an internal look at themselves to see what you've done or what are you capable of doing or how much do you stand on the sideline and just be concerned about your own life. You know what I mean? To say that there's a greater good that we all could do, and it reflects back to me to Dr. Martin Luther King. Because once again, we look at him as being this frail, frightened human man who had children and a wife, everyday concerns, but yet and still he was able to sacrifice himself for the greater good of all mankind.
He wasn't so different from those of us that could be taking up this idea.
Doing the same thing, which is one of the things I think Torrey Hall says with taking that picture, you know, two people on the wall, Jesus and Dr. Martin Luther King, and taking Dr. Martin Luther King off of the wall and making him, putting his feet on the ground. He's just like you. He's just like me. Mm-hmm. And we're all capable of the same incredible, awesome things.
We're speaking this hour with actor Hassan El Amin, who plays Dr. Martin Luther King, and director Akin Babatunde about their production of The Mountaintop, which runs at the Dallas Theater Center through November 15th. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call 800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Certificate Program, where you can take courses in art, architecture, history, literature, and more. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with director Akin Babatunde and actor Hassan El Amin. We're talking about The Mountaintop, which is about the last night on earth of Dr. Martin Luther King. It runs at the Dallas Theater Center through November 15th. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. We have Sharon on the line in Arlington. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I had a comment and then a question. I wanted to tell Mr. Babatunde that I loved his rendering of The Color Purple at Jubilee.
Thank you.
Oh, it was a wonderful take on it. And I'm wondering if you are taking The Mountaintop and doing I shouldn't say a twist, because you kind of, to me, when you did The Color Purple, I loved it. When you added the, I don't know, I call them the church ladies.
Okay.
I don't remember that being in the piece that I saw on Broadway.
Yeah, they were there.
They were,
I just did something different.
I didn't remember, but maybe
them.
It's the way they stood out here. But I just love the way that it kind of showcased them at the same time.
Yeah.
But it was a nice piece. In the play, The Mountaintop, is there a way that we can look at who Kameh was? Because I did see it one time. You guys were talking about your life passing before you, that's kind of who she was. And using that as a way to review his life before he, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I think that's an interesting way of describing her presence at that particular time. Maybe she is that thing that is put there in a human form to help him address his past, his present, and possibly his future. So I think you're right on target with that.
These two roles are so intense, Akin. I would imagine there were a lot of actors who were very interested in scoring them for themselves. What were you looking for, and what drew you specifically to Hassan and Tiana?
I went to New York. We went all over the country looking for actors to play this particular role. And what I wanted more than anything was the reason why you say something rather than how you say something, which is the essence of acting, why you say what you say. And unfortunately, Joel Ferrell and myself was the associate artistic director. We saw great actors, but they were acting rather than living. And in our, right, you know, because Hassan is playing Scrooge,
right,
in Christmas Carol, so he's a busy, busy man. And because of that, it could have conflicted with the schedule. And we had to just come back home. And I said there that Kevin, Joel, myself, Kevin Moriarty, the artistic, Hassan has got to do it if he's available and has, you know, can work it out. And that's what he brings. He brings an honesty, an openness, a lack of performance. And One of the things that I love so much about this particular production is you peek into this room. It almost feels like you're a voyeur of some kind, just mm-hmm. looking in and saying, oh, am I really hearing this or whatever? And I wanted so much for that to be accomplished. And I think that he does that so well. And also the actress playing Kameh does that.
Yeah, for me, it was quite an honor. Originally not scheduled to do the role and then being blessed to get it. And at the time, I was actually teching for Soldier's Play, playing Sergeant Waters, when we began our rehearsal. But again, having the opportunity to play MLK in the mountaintop, being challenged, being frightened, was such a great opportunity that I couldn't wait to do it. It was a lot of hard work. It really was a lot of hard work. And I love the specificity in which Akeen works with as far as what his vision is and aligning yourself and thinking at a certain age that, you know, this is my thing. I can do this. But being challenged in a way to really open your eyes and see things or approach it differently or not going to what is literal on the page, you know, that in itself, that's why we talk about other productions. There's not a production like this one.
I don't think so.
No.
Not at all.
Not one.
Not
this
in
one
the
is,
look,
no.
The feel, the spirit. There's not one.
No. This one is special.
When you talk about being a certain age and knowing you can do something, I'm always struck every time I'm reminded of the life story of Dr. King, how young he was.
Yes.
39 when he died, and that's explicitly referred to in the script here.
Yes.
34 in the March on Washington.
Yes.
I mean, and you know, for a while you think, well, I knew him as a child and I learned that story then, and that's why this person seems so timeless and ageless, but he continues to seem that way. But, I mean, to be candid, you are older than 39, Hassan, and you look fantastic.
Thank you.
But,
yes,
but if you remember the assassination of Dr. King, you are older than 39.
Exactly.
By more than a few years.
Yes.
I wonder how much you thought about age and about coming across as younger, or if you thought you actually needed to portray how exhausted he was in those moments when no one was looking.
No. Age was not an issue or concern. It was the honesty of who the man was in that moment. Mm-hmm. So I can say I'm 14. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We make the statement of he was 39 because he was 39. And I'm an actor who was bringing to life a story. So was I concerned about being too old? Absolutely not. Never was a thought of mine. Mine was the fact that I get to bring this story to life. And how can I be honest to that? So age was never a concern for me. Never.
And I think it's a trap, like Hassan stated, you know, to play the given. Anytime you're old or feeling worn, what do? You play against it.
Right.
You know, you're not walking. We don't see people walking around, oh, I'm so worn and tired. They're fighting to stay alive. And I think that's what the human spirit does. And that may have a few things I've seen online. I see that they plug into the stereotype of what should be rather than the soul of what kept him going.
Yeah, you also think about just the what the given circumstance is within the realms of the play. A beautiful young woman, maid, brings a cup of coffee to Dr. Martin Luther King. Is he going to act old? Is he going to act worn down? No, he's going to lift himself up in the presence just of how do I present myself in this moment. It wouldn't be the other. No, I'm old, I'm worn down. No, it's going to be I'm lifted up and I'm young and I'm vibrant.
Right.
The first time, Hassan, that you lit up a Pall Mall, which in the show is referred to as a Pall Mall, a cigarette, and took a slug of whiskey as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., what did that feel like?
Well, again, once again, we're behind the closed doors. Who is he in those real moments when he's not on, when the world is not looking at him, when he can let his hair down, so to speak, and be comfortable in the realms of who he is? So for me, again, I have to challenge my my reverence for him, me, Hassan El-Amin, for Dr. Martin Luther King. And I have to become the actor or who is bringing to life this character on stage. And if this is honest and true to who he is, then I cannot, I will not judge him. I will live honesty and truth through him. So for me, it's like, okay, if this is what he does, and if he used certain language, if this is the way he is, then I want to find the reality in that. So we know he smoked. We know that some of his friends said he used colorful language. He was honest and real. So I get to bring that to life. So for me, it's like, hey, let's go there. Let's go there.
I felt like, again, with the reverence, well, how far can we go giving him a drink? He wasn't a drunkard. We're not playing him as a drunkard.
No.
But the fact that he takes a drink, is offered a drink, is a very natural thing. You know, to relax in that particular moment. And those essences, those things are what we consistently explored. What was natural? Because not tipping it over and saying, well, now he's a womanizer. We're going to look at him really being a womanizer. None of that. What was the naturalistic, simple conversation that was happening?
This is one of the things, too, that I have to acknowledge once again, Akeen on, because for me, it's like, well, how far can we push? You know, and in the sense of there was still consideration of who he is, who he was, what he was enduring, what he meant to the world. All of that was still a part of this production. Mm-hmm. You know, we still give him his place of reverence. We're not, you know, bastardizing him in any way. In any way.
No, we still love Dr. King at the end of this, at the end of the show.
Yes.
The one thing I want to leave, my final question is about, you know, the sacrifice. We think about him sacrificing his life, and we think about him, you know, just working relentlessly. I hadn't given so much thought to the fact that it was truly a sacrifice for him, basically, not to be there to raise his kids and not to be there to enjoy the company of his wife very often.
Yes. Again, you think about, you mentioned his age. He was 39 at the time. He even made a statement that he would not live to see 40. And you think about, once again, how he gave himself to a greater cause. So who sacrificed in it? You think his wife, his children, his immediate family. They didn't get the opportunity to really enjoy who their father was to them because he had a calling on his life, and his calling took him away from them. So I think in terms of that, the sacrifice that was made, not only by him, but by his family as well, they sacrificed a great deal. And you think they lost their father at a tender age of 39. They grew up basically without having dad there at home. So you think about it. And I think, too, we still think now, that was in 1968. Still think of the importance Dr. King still has in our lives. Think of the importance that he has in the world and where we are today. Even some of the congressional things that have taken place, laws that were changed to make the world a better place for not just African-Americans, but for everyone. That was an incredible thing that he accomplished.
And I don't want to give this away, but there is an incredible moment in the show of self-confession where it absolutely brings tears to your eyes.
I know the moment
you know what I'm talking about, where we see that kind of revelation come upon him.
We will leave it there. Director Akeen Babatunde directed the play The Mountaintop. Actor Hassan El-Amin plays Martin Luther King Jr. And Tiana Johnson, who wasn't with us today, plays Kameh, the other character in that play. It's open at the Dallas Theater Center through November 15th. Gentlemen, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
And I just want to say Tiana Johnson is fabulous.
Fantastic.
She's fabulous.
Kameh. She's
fantastic.
Wonderful.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.